I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the Olympia school teacher we featured in an exclusive report last week was the previous subject of an investigation for the content of a sex ed lesson.
She walked into class, went over to a cabinet, pulled it out and stuck it on the counter. It's a pink, purple, sparkly dildo.
Plus, Let's Go Washington makes a major announcement and makes history in the process. And finally, will Democrats ditch Joe Biden after his poor debate performance? We'll discuss that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. What we're witnessing in Washington state right now is an exercise in democracy, the likes of which our state has never seen, at least not in my lifetime. You know, we already know that we have this one party control in Olympia and really across much of the state, where you have one party, Democrats, making a lot of the decisions and making decisions sometimes without any bipartisan support and pushing them through because they can. And that has been the choice of voters, right? There's a reason why we have a Democratic majority in the House, the Senate, a Democrat in the governor's office for 40 years, Democrats in control of most of our major cities. And that's because that is the decision that voters have made. But that doesn't make it any easier for the probably 40 to 45% of Washingtonians who aren't in line with many of those decisions and many of those policies. And I've said the last remaining check we have on power is the people's right to initiative and referendum. And man, is that right being utilized in the last year and a half to great effect. So Let's Go Washington making a major announcement yesterday that they are going to be turning in well over the necessary number of signatures for initiative 2066 this week to the Secretary of State's office. I told you they probably needed around 410,000 signatures. Well, they're going to go down to the Secretary of State's office tomorrow at 3 p.m. and they're going to turn in 425,800 signatures from Washington voters who want to protect natural gas as a choice in their homes and in their businesses. And 425,000 is already a lot, but that's not even the end of it. They still have all the signatures that were turned in and collected over the weekend. They have signatures that are still arriving in the mail. So while they are going to turn in 425,800 signatures tomorrow at 3 p.m. to the Secretary of State, it is very possible that they hit 500,000 in a month and a half. That's insane. It shows the organizational ability of Let's Go Washington, what they've been able to achieve over the last year and a half, running six initiatives last year, being able to have that infrastructure in place, the names of voters, sending voters copies of 2066 in the mail who'd signed previous initiatives, and how quickly they were able to do this in a month and a half means no policy is off limits. This puts Democrats and the party in power on notice in a major way in the state of Washington. When they push through something like, in essence, a ban on natural gas at 2 a.m, like they did this past legislative session, thinking they can get away with it because they're the party in power, they can do it at 2 a.m. when no one's watching, they can claim it's not a natural gas ban. No, that's not what it is. And think, well, we have enough power. Well, it won't matter. It does matter. And around 500,000 voters think it matters. And so it is so hard to overstate the significance of this and how Democrats are now going to realize that they can't do things like this without pushback from the public, without the public utilizing its last remaining check on the party in power. So you've got 425,000 that are going to be turned in. If, by the way, you want to participate in the turn-in process outside the Secretary of State's office, you can join Let's Go Washington tomorrow at 3 p.m. to do that. A couple other things. We need to send a message that banning natural gas would be deeply unpopular. That means if you still have a signature for a sheet that you haven't turned in, look for locations at letsgowa.com to turn it in. You can turn it in before July 5th, the sooner the better, and they can make a second drop-off at the Secretary of State's office with any additional signatures. So if you mailed it over the weekend, they're still going to be counting those. They're still going to be going through those. They're still going to be dropping those off. The more signatures, the better. But this is immensely meaningful. What I'll also say, I just want to reiterate, even for those of you who might be Democrats, we love our Democratic friends, no big deal. Even for those of you who might support a ban on natural gas, given how effective Let's Go Washington is now showing it is at collecting signatures for initiatives in a timely manner, I think that makes it even more likely that if Democrats get a supermajority, they will do everything they can to get rid of our constitutional right for initiative and referendum. They have already, in essence, eliminated the ability to run a referendum on a new law. Because what do? Remember, they put it an emergency clause in to even laws that aren't emergencies. And that means that it bypasses the ability to run a referendum to repeal a law, because referendums are much easier to do. It doesn't take the number of signatures, the amount of work to run a referendum. So they don't want to do that. So they have taken that away without taking it out of the Constitution. Any time that they pass a bill that they believe could be repealed on referendum that they know is not popular, they call it an emergency, and they stop us from exercising our right to referendum. So they have a ban on, they got rid of referendum in principle already. So now we just have initiatives left. So be mindful. I don't think there's a single voter in the state of Washington, maybe a couple. I don't think there's a single reasonable, rational voter in the state of Washington who thinks it would be a good idea to give one party completely unchecked power and to give up our ability to run initiatives. And if you do think that that's okay, I highly suggest getting your head examined or living in a different country without a democracy, because that's what that would result in. That essentially nullifies our democracy in Washington state if you've got a supermajority for Democrats and no ability to put a check on any of their ideas at all. So big news. We'll have more on this tomorrow, but congratulations to Let's Go Washington on Initiative 2066. They're well over the number of signatures to have a good balance to make sure that, you know, if there's any that aren't valid, et cetera, they still have enough. And a huge, huge thank you and congratulations to the voters of Washington State who made this happen during the summer months, found a way, there's a will, there's a way, found a way to sign this initiative to get us over that threshold. So no clapping, Nicole. You're not gonna. Okay. She's like, Randy, I'm busy. All right. We had an exclusive report last week that has been viewed in all corners of the internet. In fact, libs of TikTok picked up our reporting. So I imagine that it wasn't the best of weekends for Olympia School District teacher Karina Champion. And you know what? I don't care. Here's the thing. I don't like, you know, naming, shaming, attacking people who aren't like politicians or who haven't committed a crime. I don't get pleasure out of naming and shaming teachers. I don't. And I get it. And I get we have a big reach. And especially when someone like Libs of TikTok picks up, I am sure that Karina Champion, I saw she locked down her social media accounts. I'm sure that she has been targeted by some vitriol. I don't ever like to see that happen. But this is someone who is indicative of what's wrong with our public education system and who is spewing her political and social agenda at kids who are in middle school and seeing no meaningful repercussions for it. And unless we name and shame some of these teachers and demand action and accountability, nothing's going to get better. So I don't love doing it, but I feel compelled to have to do it. So in case you didn't read or watch our exclusive reporting on this last week, Karina Champion, she teaches math and science in the Olympia Regional Learning Academy, which is part of the Olympia Public School District. And she was a guest in a sixth grade classroom in that school where she was supposed to be talking, it was a science class, and she was supposed to be talking about a project to make a quilt depicting different types of plants and insects. And instead, she went on this unhinged rant that a sixth grader was so disturbed by, the little sixth grader felt the need to record it, where Karina Champion talked about how Ronald Reagan was a homophobe and he's responsible for people dying of HIV/AIDS. And then she also ranted a completely lie-filled rant about Trayvon Martin. Here's a clip.
So Trayvon Martin was a kid who was a little bit older than you. He was 13 years old. He went to go walk to the corner store and got some Skittles and an iced tea for his brother. And on his way home, a white supremacist was following him in his truck and yelling at him, and then got out and killed him. And the person who killed him did not go to jail, was not charged because of a racist law that's currently in Florida that allows people to kill someone else if they are scared. And how this law is generally applied is by white supremacists who say they were scared just by the presence of a black or brown person.
Yeah, obviously that's not true, but she would have gotten away with this had it not been for a sixth grader who, again, decided, hey, I'm going to record this and show my mom. So last week on the show, we had on the mother of that sixth grader and talked about it. And we also put out this exclusive report that you could have read. We did a written story about it, too, going into more detail about this incident in Karina Champion. And in that report, I had mentioned, we put that this is not the first time that this particular Olympia Regional Learning Academy has been the subject of controversy. And we talked about a report from the Olympian from 2019. We just mentioned it offhand because, like, hey, we're talking about this that happened with Karina Champion. But also at this school, there was this headline from the Olympian in 2019. Orla failed to alert parents. Sex ed was starting. Parents says content was inappropriate. And it says, and it's quoting a couple parents saying that a teacher at ORLA had a sex ed lesson that parents didn't approve and that they weren't warned about, and that this particular teacher used a dildo in class as part of the sex ed lesson. So I had just thrown that in, like, hey, you know, we've done a bunch of stories on the Olympia School District. So while we're talking about Karina Champion and her political and social rant, I should also mention this happened at the school in 2019, only to find out that the unnamed teacher who brought a dildo to class that was reported in the Olympian is Karina Champion. You cannot make this stuff up. So we find out, and all of a sudden, Nicole's inundated with messages from parents saying, hey, 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 the dildo teacher is the same teacher as Karina Champion. And not only were parents saying this, the parents who were involved in, who had a kid in that class in 2019, where Karina Champion brought in a dildo. Sorry, yes, I'm using the word dildo a lot on their show today. Kids had to hear about it. They got copy. They were part of a full-fledged official investigation in 2019 into Karina Champion's conduct. And they provided us with a copy of that investigation. So an outside entity was brought in. They called it a pre-litigation program. So I don't know if they thought maybe a teacher or a parent would sue over this dildo sex ed lesson. So they brought in this outside entity called Clear Risk Solutions to do a full-fledged investigation in 2019 into Karina Champion. And there were multiple allegations they investigated, 7 allegations total, that she violated 7 different policies, including transporting students in her private vehicle for a non-emergency purpose, using a chaperone who was under the age of 21 during 2 field trips, discussing inappropriate topics during sex ed classes, using a sex toy, a dildo, to demonstrate how to apply a condom, failing to notify parents about the sex ed presentation, allowing students to use cell phones during class, and allowing volunteers from a pizza kitchen to meet alone with students without conducting proper criminal background checks. So those were all the allegations that parents brought forth against Karina Champion back in 2019. And there was this full-fledged investigation. Now, the investigation found she was guilty of some of them. Other ones, there was one that was unfounded, like the pizza kitchen thing, saying that these volunteers weren't put through proper background checks. That was an unfounded allegation. But most of the allegations, there was a finding that, yes, she did violate the policy, or there wasn't enough information to prove it. For instance, on the dildo thing. So allegation 4, Ms. Champion used a sex toy to demonstrate how to apply a condom during sex education classes with 7th and 8th grade students. So as part of that investigation, they spoke to parents, they spoke to three different parents, a student who is in the class, the principal, and Karina Champion herself. Now, one of the students that spoke to this investigator said, and we're blocking out the student's name, the student told me Miss Champion used a pink and purple sparkly dildo to show the class how to put a condom on. She said Miss Champion was the first person to use the word dildo. One of the parents, a parent named Kim Johnson, Miss Johnson said her son was in a sex education class this past school year. She said her son told her that Miss Champion used the word dildo when describing the model of a penis she used to show students how to put a condom on. She said the student told her the dildo was purple and had a suction cup on the end of it. Miss Johnson said Miss Champion later blamed the student for blurting out the word dildo. She told me she does not believe Miss Champion because Miss Champion has lied to her before and because her child's internet use at home is restricted, and the child admitted to looking up the word dildo after school the day Miss Champion used it because he did not know what it meant. So in this investigation, you've got the student saying, hey, my kid says that she had this pink and God, how many times am I going to say dildo? Do I have to say dildo in one show? She had this pink and purple suction cup at the end, sparkly sex toy, that Miss Champion called it a dildo and used it to show him how to put a condom on. And Karina Champion, who was interviewed by this investigator, says, Miss Champion told me the dildo was manufactured as an anatomically correct teaching aid and is not a sex toy. Yeah, okay. Yeah, they make teaching aids for middle schoolers that are a pink and purple sparkly dildo with a suction cup at the end. Yeah, okay. She told me the teaching aid is a replica of a male penis and is dark purple in color. She told me teaching students how to correctly put on a condom is part of the 7th and 8th grade flash curriculum. Miss Champion said a student from the back of the classroom yelled the word dildo when she brought the teaching aid out. She said she corrected the student by referring to the device as an anatomically correct teaching aid. Does anyone believe her knowing what we know about her? Hearing the audio of her caught on tape talking about Ronald Reagan, homophobia, Trayvon Martin, all this stuff. And now she's saying, oh, no. A student shouted dildo. And I told them that this pink and purple sparkly sparkly object with a suction cup at the end was actually an anatomically correct teaching aid. Give me a freaking break. So anyway, we have this investigative report. And then, like I said, Nicole was just inundated with messages from parents about this. And so one of the parents whose daughter was a 7th grader in this class where they weren't told about the sex ed lesson, where, you know, a dildo was used. Her name is Jamie Hinton. She agreed to come on the show and talk to us today. She also pointed out, so this is 2019. So her child who was a 7th grader just graduated. She has another child who's a junior and is no longer in the Olympia School District because of this incident. Took him out, did some online learning, and then now is in, I think, the North Thurston School District because of this incident in 2019. So Jamie Hinton was nice enough and brave enough to come on and talk about this investigation into her child's former teacher, Karina Champion. So we do this story on this teacher, Karina Champion, last week. And we were not aware, we were aware of this dildo incident because it had been in the news, but we did not know it was the same teacher until parents came forward. So I guess when you saw the video that we had last week of Karina Champion going on this political rant, what did you think?
Again, we're like, they didn't do anything to censor her. They didn't do anything to protect these kids from this misinformation.
Yeah. So take us back a few years now to 2019 when this incident happened. Your child was in 7th or 8th grade, because I know she teaches both.
7th.
7th grade. So mm-hmm. My understanding of the situation is that they were in a class that was, or a lesson that was supposed to be kind of about relationships and stuff and how to manage them. Can you explain your understanding of what they were supposed to be learning about?
It was a health class.
Okay. So some stuff is going to come up.
Sex ed.
Yeah. But were you told this particular day what kind of lesson there would be, that there would be kind of a sex ed specific lesson?
No, we were not notified that they would be teaching sex ed. So we had the option of opting our kids out.
Yeah, which is required, and we'll get to that in a moment because there was an investigation done into all of this. So, as a mom, when did you first become aware that this lesson had gone off the rails quite a bit?
The day it happened.
And how'd you find out?
I had a friend who was a teacher there, and she stopped me and said, "You need to ask your daughter what was on the board today." And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "Just ask her." And my daughter came out of class and I said, "Rory, what was on the board today?" Her eyes instantly went to the floor and she started to get emotional. And I was like, "What the heck is going on?" And we sat down with her and another classmate. And she told us exactly what was talked about and discussed. And we had some questions we asked her too, because it's a sensitive subject. I understand girls are going to be a little more sensitive. But we were appalled.
So what was on the board? And if don't mince words if that was
No,
shown to
there
kids,
was,
so
from my understanding, from the actually one of the students took notes, one of the girls, was, ways to prevent pregnancy and STDs. And the first thing was, or pregnancy, and it was permanent sterilization was number one on the list. Non-vaginal penetration.
anal sex.
She didn't put that on there, but it was very clear that was the thing. And then I just had some clarifying questions for my daughter. I'm like, "So did you guys discuss abstinence?" And she's like, "What is that, Mom?" Okay. Which is supposed to be the majority of the topic they're supposed to talk about.
So, sterilization, permanent sterilization was brought up with your 7th grade daughter.
It was the top of the list.
Oh my God. So, is this the same day, same lesson as the dildo?
Yes.
Okay. So, what did you hear from your daughter about the dildo?
So, what she relayed to me and the two other girls, or the one girl and the gentleman also, was that they walked into class. She walked into class, went over to a cabinet, pulled it out, and stuck it on the counter. It's a pink, purple, sparkly dildo. And she used the word.
So this is where there's some discrepancy. So there is was an investigation done, and Karina Champion is essentially saying all the dirty words, all the dildo talk, the anal talk, all that stuff. The kids were saying this stuff. I didn't bring up the word dildo, and you disagree with that. Your child disagrees with that.
Two of the girls disagreed that she was the first one to say it. I'm more upset that my daughter knew what that word was before she knew what abstinence was. And she was mortified.
I mean, I'm mortified. I'm mortified that we're having this conversation, right? And but the thing is, it's like whenever we talk about stuff like this, I feel like you have to be just as vulgar and descriptive as the teacher was with kids. Because it's like if kids had to sit through it, let's sit through it and talk about the same stuff and see how uncomfortable we get about it, right?
Well, I understand kids are going to ask the questions to get a reaction, but as adults, we're supposed to redirect it to appropriate stuff.
Right. So there's a little bit of difference. You know, they took Karina Chapman, they did this investigation, and she basically says, oh, you know, I didn't use that kind of verbiage. The kids use that kind of verbiage. And it's just kind of her word versus the students, right? Yeah. So what happened to what do you know how the school disciplined her?
No, because we were told that we couldn't get that information. And I know that in the report it said that there was a write-up done for a part of it, for not notifying the parents. And I understand you need, tools, visual tools for kids, but my expectation is you use proper terminology so they know what it is. And it should be a replica of a male sex organ and make it a realistic color. I don't care what color it is, but pink, purple, sparkly is not.
No, that's a sex toy. That's a sex toy. That's ridiculous. And that's kind of how in this investigation they get around finding her at fault for that is like, well, you know, it allows you to have sort of a, you know, a something to demonstrate what it is. And like, look, if it's an atomically correct male penis and you want to put a condom on that, fine. They did find her, like you said, she did not give proper notice to parents. So that was something that the investigator said, yeah, she failed to do that. And there were some other things that were unrelated to this class. She was accused of, you know, bringing kids places in her personal vehicle, etc. As a parent at the time, what was your expectation of what would happen to this teacher?
I would expect that she wouldn't be teaching this subject. I would expect that there would be some oversight by the district to make sure these situations don't happen again. And I understand sex ed's a hard topic, but the whole point of it is for us parents to start the conversation. They get education from people that are supposed to be, they look up to, their teachers. And then we come back and continue that conversation for healthy practices. But that's not what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a no-brainer stuff. Like, hey, you know, there's a place for this kind of conversation for kids, making sure that they're, you know, they know about abstinence and some of the risks that can be associated with having sex and STDs and all of that stuff. But, you know, talk to parents about it. Like, let's cover the basics and let parents talk about anything above and beyond the basics. I mean, talking to seventh graders about permanent sterilization, I can't imagine that's part of any sort of curriculum you would have approved your daughter learn about.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah. So now knowing, you know, here we are 5 years later, you have this teacher who, again, no notification for parents, goes and visits a sixth grade class, goes into this rant about Ronald Reagan, homophobia, Trayvon Martin, white supremacy, and we're still being told we can't know, parents can't know what the punishment is. I mean, what, in the eyes of a parent, do you want the district to know about your frustration with this?
They should be open. We are entrusting them with our kids. And I wouldn't send my kids there ever again. And I will start by saying Orla is an amazing program. It is. It's just those individuals that they're using it for their own platform. And that was premeditated.
Yeah. If you're looking, sorry, you said you have a friend who's a teacher as well. And this is something I think about a lot. What do you think teachers like Karina Champion and stories like this, how do they reflect on other teachers in that district?
It makes them all look bad.
Yeah.
It really does. And it's not a bad area. It's not a bad system in itself. It's just they're not doing the right thing for the students. They're not protecting the students.
Yeah. Here you are speaking up. We spoke to Jake, the mother of one of the sixth graders, last week. First time she'd ever, I'm assuming this is the first time you've ever done a news interview about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you say to other parents who are frustrated, but just keep quiet?
You can't, because like we thought that, you know, this was going to change, you know, standing up for our kids. And then this happening again, it's like, what if we would have stood up more and we would have, you know, fought harder? But honestly, all of us took our kids out of the program. Well, not one of them stayed, and then it was horrible.
Wow.
There was backlash, in my opinion. That's my opinion. But yeah, it's been a constant thing.
It's just insane. And, you know, I get it. The dildo thing grabs headlines. But more concerning to me is that she allegedly talked about medical castration to seventh graders. That, oh, that's the way to avoid, you know, getting pregnant, is just make it so that you can never get pregnant again for the rest of your life and let me implant that in your head in seventh grade. That's the accusation of this parent. But I don't know why a seventh grader would make up that medical castration was put on a whiteboard. I mean, what kind of child even knows about that? So, and frankly, I am very inclined to believe what the students say and the parents say over what Karina Champion says, because we see now that she has a pattern of this kind of conduct. And there is no reason, no setting we're bringing what is clearly a sex toy. God forbid it was her personal sex toy. I don't know. In the document, the principal says that she got it from another teacher. God forbid it's that teacher's personal sex toy. Who knows? It doesn't belong in a classroom, weirdos. It's just crazy. And these things are not happening on an island. It's not like we're choosing the one teacher who's done one thing wrong and everyone else, there's no problems at all. No, there's a clear pattern here. At some point, you have to stop claiming that these things are rare when they happen that often. I mean, in the Olympia School District alone, which I believe is one of the worst school districts in the country in terms of political and social agendas being pushed on kids, just by virtue of the number of stories that we alone have done. I mean, kids being segregated on the basis of race for social groups because it's not safe to be around white kids for Black students. Like, that was like, what, fourth graders or something? We did, and this is relevant to this story, and I want to bring it up for that purpose. When you talk about the influence of teachers like this. So remember last year, we had an exclusive report on another Olympia School District teacher named Jennifer Knight that started a secretive relationship, an email texting relationship with a 10-year-old, because the 10-year-old believed that they were transgender. So 10-year-old girls coming to school, a child of immigrants, coming to school and is identifying as a boy at school by a different name, and under OSPI guidelines and rules, you hide that information from parents unless the kid wants their parents to know. So it's okay for the teachers to know, okay for fellow students to know, okay for staff to know that, you know, little Debbie's coming to school and identifying as Derek. But not okay to tell the parents that. So this teacher, Jennifer Knight, had engaged in this secret email exchange with a 10-year-old saying, delete these messages so your parents don't find out or you'll be outed instantly, saying, I'd take you into my home anytime. Weird stuff. That's completely inappropriate. Well, one of the things that was pointed out to us in investigating Karina Champion, somebody brought up Jennifer Knight as well, both of them are reps for their school to the Olympia Education Association, which is the school district teachers union. And we talk about the Washington Education Association a lot and the power of the teachers unions. So here you have two, what I believe are unfit teachers. Teachers who have proven that they cannot be trusted to educate other people's kids. And Jen Knight is the representative to the Olympia Education Association for Lincoln. And Karina Champion is the representative to the Olympia Education Association for Orla. So, of course, then you have two teachers who are inarguably unfit, who are then fighting, you know, on behalf of their schools in the teachers' union. And what are they going to be fighting for? Of course, they're going to be fighting against policies that make it easier for parents to know what's happening in classrooms, because look at what they're doing in classrooms. They don't want parents involved. Karina wants to push her political. She wants to talk about how Ronald Reagan is a homophobe and because of him, people died of AIDS. She wants to tell complete falsehoods about Trayvon Martin and its white supremacy and Florida's evil and all these things. And Jen Knight wants to use her job as a teacher to push radical gender ideology on kids, so much so that the parents of that 10-year-old girl, when they found out that Jen Knight was having a secretive email communication with their child, they didn't just leave the district. They left the country. Immigrants to the United States. The Olympia School District was so bad and they were so horrified by what happened there that they took their child back to the country they immigrated from. Come on, that's insane. And now these are the people answering, going to the Olympia Education Association and part of the most powerful union ecosystem in the state, the teachers union. And I will just say, you know, all of this, I think, is relevant under the backdrop of 2081, the Parental Rights Initiative, that got more than 420,000 signatures that Democrats and Republicans in the legislature passed into law this session. And that now the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction is like, I don't think we're going to follow aspects of that. And now there's lawsuits trying to overturn the will of voters and the will of parents and the will of the legislature, because they are so eager to allow teachers like this to continue to teach. Karina Champion doesn't belong anywhere near a classroom. Now we have a six-year history to refer to. And on top of all of that, if I may just rant for one moment longer, we're told we don't get to know what the disciplines are. We didn't get to know what the discipline was for Jennifer Knight, who's telling a 10-year-old, delete these emails between us so your parents don't find out. We don't get to know what the discipline was for Karina Champion when she brought a dildo to class and told seventh graders that medical castration was an option to avoid pregnancy. And we don't get to know. Nicole, have you to date heard back from the Olympia School District?
No, I have not.
Oh, shock of the century.
No,
they don't care. They don't want to answer. Why would they answer to us? They don't answer to us. They don't care. They don't answer to the media. And the teachers' unions are so powerful that they negotiate these contracts where that's part of it. You pay their salaries, and then you're kept in the dark. You pay their salaries, and then they tell your kid, delete our email threads. You pay their salaries, and then teachers like Karina Champion go to class and talk about how Ronald Reagan's a homophobe and talk about white supremacy. How is that right? Anyone paid with taxpayer funds should be fully accountable to the taxpayers, and especially the parents. Especially, think about that for a second. Jake, the mom who joined us last week to talk about Karina Champion's rant, she doesn't get to know what the discipline is for Karina Champion. Jamie, the mom we had on today, whose child, seventh grade child, had a dildo plopped down right in front of her, suction cup to the table, who was told about medical castration, she doesn't get to know what the discipline was for her child's former teacher. That is wrong. And then you have the head of our public school system who absolutely does not care that more than 400,000 Washington voters and both parties in Olympia said, yes, we value parental notification, and now he's trying to get around it. Shameful. Shameful. Absolutely shameful. And like I said at the beginning, just to bring it full circle, I don't like having to do this. I don't like having to put individual teachers on blast who aren't politicians. But this is what you forced us to do, because you're trying to get away with all these things behind the scenes. And unless we say, and parents say, God bless the parents who've come forward in the last week on this issue, unless you come forward and say, no, we're not doing that anymore. We'll name and shame until these school districts are so, I don't know, guilted, can't stand the public scrutiny, that we'll finally do something about it. And I'm grateful to Libs of TikTok for putting this story out there, because again, it takes, I guess, a little bit of shaming for something to happen. So we'll continue to follow up on this story. In fact, we have more updates on this story. We just can't fit them all into one day. And so we'll have some more updates on this tomorrow. All right. Can we take a break from anything sex related for at least like one segment?
Yeah, just one.
Just
though.
One segment? Okay, just one. Gotcha. So there's some major SCOTUS rulings. One of them has the potential to have impacts on cities up and down the West Coast that are really struggling with the homeless crisis. And that is the decision in the Grants Pass case. So the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that no, it is not cruel and unusual punishment to have bans on public camping. The question is, how will elected leaders who have allowed the homelessness crisis in Washington, Oregon, and California, how will they use this ruling to actually help deal with the homelessness crisis? This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So again, Supreme Court of the United States, City of Grants Pass, Oregon v. Johnson. And this had to do, again, with this ruling, lower court ruling, that you can't just say you can't be homeless and set up a tent here in a public space, because that's cruel and unusual punishment. Now, had SCOTUS ruled in line with that, that would have been disastrous. I mean, you take our homelessness crisis times 1,000, because it would have stripped cities of the ability to clear anyone from public spaces, whether they were offered access to services or not. But thankfully, SCOTUS fell on the right side of this. They held the enforcement of generally applicable laws regulating camping on public property does not constitute, quote, cruel and unusual punishment prohibited by the Eighth Amendment. Okay, so what's going to happen now? The answer is it depends. The answer is it depends on the city you live in. It depends on the political will of the person in charge of the city that you live in, and whether they're willing to take this and then take a more aggressive stance on public camping. Now, I happen to believe there's already been a slow, gradual shift on this issue, even in very progressive places like San Francisco, like Portland. I mean, remember, we talked on the show last week about how Mayor Ted Wheeler in Portland came out and he said, you know what? we have to have, for a civil society, we have to have rules and people have to play by the rules. So he said last week that starting today, they're starting to enforce their ban on camping, even in the city of Portland. And we've had elected leaders across cities in Washington state who have said, look, this is out of control. We're going to enforce our camping ban. We're going to continue to offer services and outreach. But if they don't take it, then we're going to tell them they can't camp here. So that has been the case. And I think that's entirely appropriate. I don't really want necessarily any elected leaders to use this Supreme Court ruling and say, hey, just go out and clear them, spray them down and clear them out. I want them to offer services first. That's important because moving them from place to place doesn't solve the crisis. Getting them help for their drug addiction, for their mental health issue, and for, in the rare case, when they truly just cannot afford a place to live, which I think is like 0.00001% of people who are living on our streets. I think that's appropriate. So I think that's what you'll continue to see in Washington state. But then there's the question of cities that have camping bans that for various reasons are not being enforced as we speak. How does this ruling from SCOTUS change that? So one of the cities where this is clearly an issue that's up for discussion is the city of Berrien, Washington. So as you know, because we've discussed it on the show, the city of Berrien has a ban on camping, and it specifically limits this. It has kind of a map where it says, okay, can't camp here, can camp here, can't camp here, can camp here. And then, it, you know, we're going to go out, we're going to offer you services, and then we're going to clear those encampments if you don't take the services. The issue is that the King County Sheriff's Office is responsible for enforcing that ban. And the King County Sheriff, who's now an appointed leader, not an elected leader, has said, no, we're not going to enforce the city of Berrien's ban on camping. We don't think it's constitutional. So we want a little more clarity on that. So that's the question. Okay. You said we're not enforcing it because it's not constitutional. Well, now the U.S. Supreme Court says, no, that's constitutional. It doesn't amount to cruel and unusual punishment. So what happens from here? Berrien Mayor Kevin Schilling joins us to discuss. Mayor Schilling, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. It's a new day in Berrien, right? Grants pass is no more. Supreme Court says not cruel and unusual punishment. So the King County Sheriff's Office came in over the weekend and they've been working hand in hand with you to clear some homeless encampments, right?
You would think that would be the case because their constitutional question has been answered. And that was the whole point of their lawsuit in the first place, was to say, we're not sure if this is constitutional. Well, we've just gotten a Supreme Court opinion that says it is, in fact, constitutional. The city of Berrien, our city attorney, our legal team knew it was constitutional the entire time. It was crafted within the framework of Martin versus Boise. And now we have this news that the sheriff's statement, the sheriff's public statement, is that they're still not going to enforce it, even if the district court judge says they have to, which is their lawsuit in the first place. So it's a bit of an interesting, confusing time right now.
Yeah, to say the least, I'll just read for folks the statement that we got from the King County Sheriff's Office. Friday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling does not change our current policy on enforcing the camping ban in Berrien. We will not arrest based on the change in this law until other issues are addressed, such as an ordinance which includes prohibited camping locations and more precision on the conduct prohibited in designated no camping zones. As noted by the Supreme Court, quote, the Constitution provides many additional limits on state prosecutorial power, promising fair notice of the law. Our deputies are sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and we remain steadfast in our position that Berrien's ordinance violates these rights. The King County Sheriff's Office and its deputies serving the Berrien community will continue to enforce all other city of Berrien laws. So your understanding today, what specifically do they believe is wrong, continues to be wrong with your ordinance?
Well, see, now I have no idea. Now I am beyond confused because King County Executive Dow Constantine himself came out on Friday and is quoted as praising the U.S. Supreme Court decision. So we have a situation where now the person who's suing us is saying what the Supreme Court decided is correct. And their statement also is confusing because nowhere in our ordinance do we arrest anybody, and we don't even have a fine associated with a civil citation. Unlike the city of SeaTac, where the King County Sheriff's Office is contracted to enforce their homeless camping law, and they have a $1,000 fine associated with theirs, but the sheriff's office continues to enforce the city of SeaTac. So there's some confusing elements here of a county agency determined to not fulfill the contract obligations they have for our city that we pay them to fulfill. And the public comments coming from the executive's office are the Supreme Court's decision is being praised by him. But certainly I'm confused in the sense that our ordinance does not criminalize, our ordinance does not arrest, our ordinance does not issue a fine. So I don't know what their issue is at this present moment, especially since the Supreme Court has determined that it is constitutional for cities to be able to say you are not allowed, you have to move your tent if the city has asked you to move your tent.
Yeah. And so do you plan to have this conversation with King County? Because I'm also baffled. I mean, the statement we got is a little bit of word soup. You know, we're following up to try to get some clarity on what exactly the issue is. But as you said, there seems to be a lot of different messaging on this. So do you have a meeting scheduled? Are you trying to get a meeting with the sheriff's office or the county?
Well, there's a couple things going on at the same time here, too, on movement on this, because the King County Sheriff's Office still has their lawsuit live against us in the U.S. District Court. So the U.S. District Court judge still has to make a determination if that suit against us by the King County Sheriff's Office is within constitutional bounds or not.
But that would include, just really quick, I know we're not constitutional scholars, but that ruling would now have to take into consideration the Supreme Court ruling on Grants Pass, correct?
It'd have to. Yeah. It'd have to, because the U.S. Supreme Court just said that the Ninth Circuit's Martin versus Boise decision is out of line, and that it is constitutional for cities to be able to have time, manner, and place restrictions on public camping, just generally. And I should also mention that this isn't just the Supreme Court. Amicus briefs were written by the governor of California, the mayors of Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, Portland, Seattle, Phoenix, and the president of the United States. So this is not like, this is a broad coalition of government leaders that are saying we need the tools to be able to handle this. And so we have the U.S. District Court judge still needing to make his determination. So their lawsuit is still live. The King County Sheriff's lawsuit is still live. And the other thing we have going on at the same time is that the King County Sheriff's Oversight Committee, the group of cities that all contract with the sheriff's office who do not have their own police force, but pay the sheriff's office to enforce the law, they have agreed to renegotiate the interlocal agreement with the sheriff's office. So we are now in a situation where the sheriff's office is saying they don't want to do their job. But the courts and the organizations that are holding the sheriff's office accountable are all saying, well, you have to. What is going on? So there's multiple avenues at place here to hold the sheriff's office and King County Executive accountable. And I think that's important.
I guess I don't get it. I'm deeply confused. Is there two things? Is there some sort of underlying beef, for lack of a better phrase, that we don't know about that would explain how hostile they're being about your camping ordinance?
I don't explicitly know.
Okay.
I don't publicly know. I don't publicly know of any. But, you know, last election cycle, the folks that ran on a platform of doing something about unregulated tent encampments won the election with close to 60% of the vote. And then we started governing and we put into place this ordinance, which was devised within a framework of Martin versus Boise, prioritizes getting people services, does not criminalize, does not issue a fine. And the King County Sheriff's Office had been enforcing that ordinance for 3 months. They had been doing it because they wrote it with us and they stopped. We don't know what we don't know. There could be, not sure. Haven't seen publicly, haven't heard publicly. So I can't go off of any speculation of who may or may not be personally holding a grudge or a vendetta against us for whatever reason. We're just Burien. We're a 54,000 person city, and we're just Burien. So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, it seems like they believe there's some fundamental differences in the way that your ordinance has been crafted versus other ordinances. And really quickly, just correct me if I'm wrong in interpreting it this way. Your ordinance specifically says no camping in these places ever, ever, right?
Yeah. So there's an associated appendix to the ordinance. It's not within the ordinance, but there's a city manager's map where that's designated spots for camping. Yes.
And that seems like that's the issue.
They seem to be saying that's the issue.
Okay.
However, they worked with the city manager to draft that map. They were aware of the map. They discussed it with the city manager and the city attorney. So, and it's a map that's existed from the beginning of our ordinance crafting. So it's not like there was a shock to anybody when now all of a sudden the map seems to be a problem for them. But again, it's not a part of the ordinance. It's an appendix to the ordinance almost. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be saying there's an issue with it. I don't know what that issue is. They just say they have a problem with it.
Would there be an issue with just getting rid of the appendix and saying, okay, we're going to have a more an ordinance that's more in line, that doesn't have that appendix where it's have specific areas where you absolutely cannot camp at any time for any reason whatsoever, and just doing something that's more in line with what other cities are doing?
I mean, I think that our city council is open to having conversations
okay.
around what we would need to do to improve or fix or have some sort of change to the ordinance. However, we don't know what those would be from the sheriff's office, because the sheriff has not actually sat down through either their lawsuit or the bounds established within the interlocal agreement and the contract disputes. They haven't done that. They just are saying they don't want to enforce this law, and they haven't sat down within the processes in place to talk about this.
Yeah, and then meanwhile, people are dying. I don't get it.
Right.
I don't get it. It seems like we have enough sort of case law and all of this to be able to move forward and just say, like you said, we're not saying go away, you know, like we're going to put you in handcuffs. We're saying, hey, we've offered you shelter, shelter, shelter. You're not taking it. You can't camp here. I don't get the problem.
And meanwhile, we have expended millions of dollars into human services funding. We have a brand new homeless outreach and nonprofit going on the ground for 3 years. We've expended money for 3 years to have this person operate. They're going to be on the ground. They're going to be getting folks connected to shelter and services. And, you know, I've heard other leaders around the county say, we have what we have in certain cities. The services we have in certain cities are the services we have. But we expect everybody, regardless of who you are, I think it's an expectation now. Well, now it should have always been an expectation, but it's an expectation that no matter who you are, you live in a community. And when you live in a community, you sign a social contract that you're going to abide by the laws, and you're going to abide by that social contract whenever you're in that city, no matter who you are. And you follow those laws and you follow those rules in order to improve the city. And all we're trying to do is help people get into a better situation where they can get assistance with their drug addiction. They can get assistance with their mental health crisis. We can help find them housing, no matter what it is. But we need the panoply of tools. And I love that word, because that was in the Supreme Court opinion. We need the panoply of tools that local governments have to get people off the streets into shelter and services. And the longer they have an option of not doing that, we're going to continue to see overdoses. And that's not a positive element of any community.
No. And I'll just end with this, because the Portland mayor said it well, and I was looking for it. He echoed what you said there. He said they're starting to enforce their camping ban. He said the only way you can define fairness is you establish rules, you make clear what the rules are, and everybody plays by the same rules. And that's the only way you can have a civil society. So Burien Mayor Kevin Schilling, we'll follow what happens here. We'll reach back out to the sheriff's office to try to get some more clarity on what's happening, but we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is a weird situation. The SCOTUS ruling clearly gives cities carte blanche to enforce camping bans. It says, no, it's not cruel and unusual punishment. And so for the King County Sheriff's Office to continue to stand by, well, we have questions about their ordinance. You know, we don't know about its constitutionality. Are you saying that you know more about what's constitutional than the Supreme Court of the United States? It's baffling to me. I failed to understand it. And if it is an issue with they are specifically concerned that the Burien ordinance has these little kind of camping no-go zones at all, like you can't even camp there for a couple of days before they tell you to move, then can't they work something out to, again, the goal is you've got people dying in the Burien homeless encampments of overdoses that clearly aren't getting the help they need. It's not empathy in any stretch of the imagination to leave people living in squalor with needles in their arms and toes. So I don't understand what the sheriff's office thinks it's accomplishing by not at least enforcing this while whatever they're trying to do works its way. You know, they've got their own lawsuit going on. So you're making, in my opinion, which is my show, I don't know if I have to preface it with it's my opinion, they're making a conscious decision to let people die. That's the decision and the choice that the sheriff's office is making, which is deeply disappointing. I've reached out to the sheriff's office. They sent us their just generic statement they'd sent out to the rest of the media. And I followed up and I said, I guess I'm still confused. Explain it to me like I'm 5 years old. Why you still, in light of the Grants Pass decision, why you still refuse to enforce the camping ordinance on the books in the city of Berrien? So in a nutshell, the Grants Pass decision is good, but it is only going to make a difference if the people in power choose to use it to enforce the law. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Coming up next, it is July 1st. You know what that means? Pride Month. Well, it means my birthday's tomorrow, but also Pride Month is over. But man, did it go out with a bang, literally. First, if you're in the market to buy or sell your home, I highly recommend reaching out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have been doing this for a long time in this market. And even with the interest rates the way they are, and the housing market has certainly slowed a bit from its peak, they know what it is going to take to make sure your home sells and it sells for a price that you're happy with. Bryce and Carla, fans of the Undivided podcast, sold their home in January in Bellevue so they could retire to Florida, and they were very, very happy with what Wes Jones was able to accomplish for them.
Just very detail oriented and never put down our property, because you could hear I-90 from our property, and it wasn't the most feng shui yummy piece of property, and our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging, this will be a premium property. He could see that, and he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was.
Yeah, and their home sold in 7 days for over list price. So if you're in the market to sell your home or buy your home or buy a home, frankly, reach out to Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Pride Month has officially come to an end, but not before people who are supportive of the Pride movement pushed the boundaries on what is acceptable in the month of June. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Okay, here's the thing. I really don't have an issue with pride parades for the most part, when they used to be just about love and acceptance and, hey, like, you know, love is love, all that stuff. I'm fine people marrying who they want to do, who they want to marry. I have come to a point that I think a lot of you are at as well, which is, it's too much. It's too much. It feels like it's being forced on us constantly. At the end of the day, you are talking about someone's sexual preferences. So it, you know, trickling into the government, trickling into public education, it's just too much. And then you have people who I believe are co-opting the movement for their fetishes, for their, you know, what is the sexual deviancy. And I don't think that's fair to gay people. And I also don't understand why the trans movement is intersecting with the gay pride movement and all this stuff. And it's worse. It was worse this June than ever before. For instance, Jonathan Cho was down, our friend Jonathan Cho with Discovery Institute was down at the annual Pride Parade in Seattle. And I've been several times. There's always a little bit of nudity and kind of like the bondage kink floats where I'm like, why? But, you know, as Cho showed in his video, first of all, is this, oh yeah, thank you. It has a blur on it. I was like, is this blurred? Just penises. Naked adults, men and women, who, this is just a fetish to me. That's just a fetish. And there's kids there. They're just going right by kids, full nudity. I don't get... first of all, why is that pride? What does that have to do with pride? And why is it allowed? You're on a public street, there's children there, and you've got your hoo-ha out, your pee-pee out, your boobs on full display. That's not a civilized society. And again, I fail to see what it has to do with pride. But as if it could get worse than just full-fledged nude adults just biking around in front of kids, it's just weird, right? Down in San Francisco, it was a totally different level of crazy. Now, There are very few things we won't show on this show. There are very few things we won't say on this show. However, one of the videos out of San Francisco is even too grotesque for us to show on this show. I'll describe it to you, and I apologize in advance, but they had this little kind of sectioned off area that it was 18 plus, but they apparently weren't checking IDs, and it was still visible. It was still outside. So even if you were just walking by on a public street and sidewalk, you could see what was happening. And it was like a fetish area where they had people being whipped, you know, naked people being whipped. They had this, there was this older guy dressed in the, you know, BDSM bondage stuff, laying in a kiddie pool, letting people urinate in his mouth and on his body. Nicole's like, stop. What do you want? I gotta describe it. I'm not gonna show it.
I know. It was disturbing.
Disgusting. See, out in the open, guys kneeling in a kiddie pool, letting someone pee in his mouth and then all over his body. Unbelievable stuff. So anyway, I'm not going to show you that video, but I will show at Taylor USA on X. He's down there. There's a couple people there for like Turning Point USA who are getting video. And he decides, like, look, he sees some police officers and he stops and asks them what I think is the reasonable question. How is it not against the law to be naked in public and to be doing things like that in public? And here is what the officers told him.
One question for you guys. I'm a news reporter.
Okay.
So obviously there's a lot of nudity around here, men, women, transsexual stuff going on. And there's kids, you know, wandering around the vent. I'm not sure on San Francisco's laws or California's laws. Is it legal for nudity to be presented in front of kids?
Nudity is legal, yeah, within certain boundaries.
But then, what are the boundaries, do you know?
Coupled with a lewd act. Yeah, anything coupled with a lewd act or anything being done for sexual gratification that involves other people.
Basically. Okay, yeah. But this event wouldn't be considered for sexual gratification.
No, if they're walking around and it's out, that's right. That'd be different than if they're masturbating,
okay,
or if they're forcing, you know, like flashing people, right? Like trying to get their attention, yeah, flashing. But no.
But even with kids, it's fine to be nude as long as there's no masturbation or anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if those officers were aware of the fetish tent area, because that's clearly for sexual gratification. It has nothing to do. The guy is naked. There is someone peeing in his mouth. There's someone getting spanked.
Oh, there was one person giving oral sex.
Right, so obviously that's sexual gratification. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to assume that those officers weren't aware of that. But surely this is a permanent event. The city of San Francisco is aware of it, right? But then also you're telling me that a stranger can have their penis out in front of a child that's not theirs, and that's not illegal because they're not doing it for sexual gratification. Why are they doing it? And who gets to decide whether it's for sexual gratification? How do you know it's not for sexual gratification? Why are we okay with people being naked in public? We've got, like, for instance, some mentally ill people in Seattle, and they walk around naked all the time and they poop on the streets. I just saw a video of somebody pooping in front of something. And to me, that also should be illegal, because that's, even if they're mentally ill, like, that's a reason to get them help, right? But when you're sound of mind, in theory, I don't think anybody could be sound of mind who's, like, out, you know, strutting their stuff in front of children that aren't theirs. I don't understand how you can say that that's not for sexual gratification, because I can't think of another reason. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, I'm sorry things are so sexual today. If you're new to the show, it's really not always like this. I asked you, do you believe public nudity should be against the law outside of designated areas such as nude beaches, even if it's not done for sexual gratification? Let's see. I love Michelle's comment. Yes, gross. Like, that kind of sums it up for me. Big Rooster says, displaying the goods is always sexual messaging. That's why there is a tradition of modesty throughout history. Slim Jakey voted no, said, no, I like boobies. Good for you, Slim Jakey. But, you know, even that officer said, yeah, if you're trying to flash someone to get their attention, then that would be for sexual gratification, so it would be against the law. So you're saying that, you know, in like New Orleans, if somebody wants to flash their boobs for beads, then you're going to jail. But if you want to ride butt naked in front of kids, like, no, not a problem. I don't get it. Well, first of all, I do get it. It's just because they don't want to arrest people related to Pride. That's it. They don't want to arrest people at a Pride event, because then people will say it's homophobic. So basically at those pride events, anything goes. Anything goes. You can pee in someone's mouth. You can get spanked. You can give someone fellatio in public. You can ride, you know, full cocked out on a bike in front of kids. Nicole, don't giggle over there. And that's fine because it's related to a pride event. So truly anything goes. And it's one of the reasons people won't push back against some of the crazy gender ideology stuff, because they don't want to be accused of being transphobic, of being a homophobe or whatever it is. But I think gay people who see this need to speak out loud and clear, because they're co-opting your movement for perversion. These people are co-opting your movement of love is love for perversion. And until you are the ones who say, not on my watch, it's going to continue to get worse. And it's going to hurt the entire pride movement, which I think there are aspects of it that are obviously perfectly fine. A couple more comments. Captain Cranky Pants says, for those that say no, that it shouldn't be against the law, just remember, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. And I'm pretty sure no one wants to take a gander at this old man shopping for groceries in the Buff. Yeah, please don't go shopping for groceries in the Buff. Christine Dana says, my kids don't need to see your junk. We try to teach them decency and modesty to an extent. We are not religious, but in our family, our beliefs are that no one wants to see our junk and we don't want to see yours. Yeah. It's just insane to me. I don't get. And I also should say really quickly, and then we'll move on to national news. I don't believe, or are we in national news? No, we're not. Gosh, I'm losing track of the day. I think that parents who are like gay, if you've got, you know, a gay couple, I think they should be able to bring their kids to a pride parade celebrating love is love and be able to do that with the expectation that their children won't be exposed to full-blown nudity or to sexual acts. Is that really too much to ask? I don't think so. So can we get back to that place? Maybe next June we can give this another try and we can be a little less insane, okay? All right, we'll get to national news. Yes, we're going to talk about the debate coming up next. We won't revisit too many of the horrifying clips from the debate, but we'll discuss what happens here with Joe Biden. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. We all need insurance. The question is, do you have the right insurance for your needs and do you have it at the best price? If you're out there and you're trying to shop the market for yourself, I don't know about you, but that stuff's confusing to me. So until I took the First Mark Challenge, I didn't even fully realize or understand everything that we had covered. We had some insurance we didn't even need. And so through First Mark, Mike and I were able to get much better insurance for the same price we had previously, which was a total no-brainer. I get comments from you guys all the time who've taken the First Mark Challenge. Maggie said, after resigning from my job after a very unexpected situation at work, I decided to finally take the First Mark Challenge in April. I had also received my latest car insurance bill, which went up yet again, and I was looking to save as much money as possible. I heard you advertise First Mark for months and months, but was skeptical. Would this actually save me money? I'm very happy to report I was connected with Levi at First Mark, and after he reviewed my car and home insurance, he recommended a new bundle that was half the cost and better coverage. I was very surprised and so thankful. That is a very typical story we hear from people who take the First Mark Challenge. And get this, best part is you never pay them anything. You don't pay First Mark to take the First Mark Challenge. It just takes a little bit of your time, and you never pay First Mark for their services. So it truly is a no-brainer. Take the First Mark Challenge today. firstmarkinsurance.com. firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State into some national news, although this is Washington State related, obviously, because we're in the United States. But I heard people saying after the debate, oh, Washington's on the table for Trump. No, it's not. Calm down, everyone. Washington's not on the table for Donald Trump. However, so I talked a little bit. So it's funny because we do the Thursday show, right? And then we tape the Sunday show for subscribers. And so Nicole and I had no idea how the debate went when we taped the Thursday show. So on the Sunday show yesterday with subscribers, we were sort of like, wow, I wonder how the debate went. We're like blissfully unaware that it was such a train wreck. For the record, I don't think Trump did great. I don't think Trump won the debate. I think that Joe Biden lost the debate because he is not well. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to say whether he has dementia or whatever it is, but the man is not well. And to me, that's been apparent for a long time. So I think I was shocked that after the debate, you know, and Joe Biden was clearly showing his mental acuity is low, low, low. I could not believe the extent to which Democratic loyalists, members of the Democratic Party, Democratic talking heads in the media acted shocked to find out that like Joe Biden can barely talk and function.
Oh, well, all those videos of him doing it for months is deep fake.
Well, those were all lies, right? I mean, yes, Karine Jean-Pierre had just called him like deep fake, cheap fakes of Biden getting lost and having to be shuffled around. And I mean, looking like he had no idea where he was just 2 weeks ago. The like liberals in the media were like, oh, that's just, you know, that's just a right wing talking point, da da da. Fast forward to after the debate, here's Van Jones, who's on CNN, a solidly liberal, even progressive political commentator. This was Van Jones immediately after the debate wrapped up on CNN.
That was painful. I love Joe Biden. I work for Joe Biden. He didn't do well at all. He did not do well at all. And he looked, you know, I'll give you the analysis, you know, you kind of have the old man versus the con man. I can walk you through how I'm supposed to see it and say it, but I just want to speak from my heart. I love that guy. That's a good man. He loves his country. He's doing the best that he can. But he had a test to meet tonight to restore confidence of the country and of the base. And he failed to do that. And I think there's a lot of people who are going to want to see him consider taking a different course now. We're still far from our convention, and there is time for this party to figure out a different way forward if he will allow us to do that. But that was not what we needed from Joe Biden, and it's personally painful for a lot of people. It's not just panic, it's pain.
Yeah, in their words, that was it was immediately consistent messaging across liberal media. Oh my gosh, that was horrible. John King was on CNN saying, I'm getting inundated with messages from my sources in the Democratic Party saying they're in panic mode, trying to figure out what to do, and they don't think Joe Biden should proceed as the nominee. I was looking at these headlines. There's two side by side that just really struck me. Time Magazine released a cover saying just simply panic and had Joe Biden on it. The this op-ed, I believe this is in the is this New York Times or Wall Street Journal? To serve his country, President Biden should leave the race. And so you saw this really consistently from media outlets that said all along that it was like a right-wing talking point to suggest that Joe Biden wasn't fit to be president. And so it was interesting because there were some in conservative media jumping all over that, like, oh, Democrats are in meltdown mode, they're in panic, you know. No, they're not. Democrats, they have all known. They've always known. And I've said the plan has always been to replace Biden. All they were looking for was a good opportunity to execute on their plan, where it was on display for the American people to see, totally undeniable, tens of millions of people watching, and then they could all of a sudden act like, oh, wow, we didn't know before. The Democrats are highly organized. They're highly strategic. They're so coordinated. That was obvious here. It was like they pushed the button and all the Democrat strategists and stuff were texting their friends at CNN and MSNBC saying the exact same thing so the message could be consistent across everything so that it would make it easier for Joe Biden, for them to get Joe Biden out and put someone else in, like Gavin Newsom. So I was almost like cringing at conservative media being like, oh, even CNN and MSNBC and the Democratic strategists are saying that Joe Biden did a bad job and that Joe Biden's not fit and that his age has gotten the best of him. Yeah, don't be surprised. That was all coordinated, 100%. You don't get consistent messaging like that in a moment's notice, like instantaneously, all sending out the exact same thing to the media to then parrot. You don't get that by mistake. It's by design. Now, I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't. I mean, I've heard some people say it would be difficult to replace Joe Biden at this stage. I think they could accomplish it certainly before the convention. But then the question is, who else would have a chance? Just because you have maybe a Gavin Newsom who is, you know, much younger and able to actually speak coherently doesn't mean that he'd be popular. Gavin Newsom can win in California, but even Californians are growing tired of Gavin Newsom. It's a one-party state. It's much easier to win in a blue state than it is to win nationwide, and California has a bad reputation in other places of the country. So I think it's this question of, okay, Joe Biden might not make it very long into a second term, but then we can just have Kamala Harris come up without actually having to put her on the ballot because Kamala Harris is even polling worse than Joe Biden taking on Donald Trump. So I'm not 100% sure what the Democratic plan is, but I do believe it has been their hope all along that they can replace Joe Biden before the convention. Now, for his part, and I blame Jill Biden, by the way, if that was your husband, would you not be like, we're done? We're done. I love you. If you loved him, it's elder abuse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I 100%. Think she's, it's almost like she's got more aggressive and pushing him out there and just going with it than she was originally.
Right. And you know, you're seeing him behind closed doors. You know, that's the best he could do after 7 days of prep, locked away, like with his team doing prep. That's the best he could do.
But he had a cold, Brandy.
Well, yeah. And then he says, yeah, well, and here's Joe Biden. This was post debate. Here's a clip.
I don't walk as easy as I used to. I don't speak as smoothly as I used to. I don't debate as well as I used to. But I know what I do know. I know how to tell the truth.
I mean, look, I'm not saying Trump didn't have any lies, but Joe Biden also said he was endorsed by the Border Patrol, which clearly wasn't true. Yeah, I mean, I do know what I do know. Here's the challenge I have with this conversation. And actually, my mom's in the other room. Is she here? So Sandy's in town from Minnesota. And it was funny because I picked her up from the airport and I was driving back and I had Nicole on speakerphone. I don't think my mom will mind that I say this. And Nicole and I were doing show prep over speaker and my mom could hear and I was talking about stuff I wanted to talk about with Biden. And she goes, oh, I thought he did a great job. And I'm like, oh. And then she got into all the Trump stuff. We have to be able to talk about Joe Biden independent of Donald Trump. We have to be able to talk about him, his fitness for office as the president of the United States, the president of the free world, and the clear mental deficiency, independent of what you think about Donald Trump. Because or else you're telling me you think Donald Trump is so bad that you're willing to put up a man who is, I think, in the final years or months of his life. I'm just going to say it. You're willing to do that, and you're willing to sacrifice his health and his well-being because Orange Man bad. And I think that's horrible. I think that's horrible. I also will just say, you know, Joe Biden, I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's been overly partisan. I think his family is mixed up in some international things that I do believe Donald Trump would have been raked over the coals for. But this is someone who has served his country. He deserves some peace. I just feel bad for him at this point. So if you're so Orange Man bad that you're willing to do this to this man that you claim you like and support and voted for, I think that's morally wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I do disagree that Trump won the debate. I mean, I think he
won by default.
Well,
I don't think it was a great debate.
Calm. I think when you were looking at how each party went into the debate asking of their candidate one to, you know, get aggressive or
just be coherent.
Yeah. And the other to stay calm, answer the questions and move on. I mean, he did exactly that. Yeah. And it did feel calm. And even people say, oh, he didn't answer the question that was asked. Mm. But he was pretty strategic the way he said, well, let me finish that question. So he got in his time and he still answered the question they were asking eventually. He didn't have the 2 minutes he was planned to have on it. He would just kind of finish it with the 30 seconds on the question he was asked or she would re-ask it and give him more time. Yeah. So I do think that he definitely looked more strategic. And when they start pulling all these cuts, I've seen lots of montages of, oh, this is Trump looking like he has dementia. I'm like,
don't even try that with me. Yeah.
I mean, we could all, if you could piece all of our little misspeaks into a montage and we could all look like we have dementia.
Oh, but you could do that to me too, for sure.
This person in real time looked like he is struggling.
Yeah, and again, I'm not a doctor, but I have known people who have family members who have dementia and it seems very similar. That's all I'll say.
It's dementia or it's just getting old. I mean, the reason older people get dementia is things start to, you know,
die. There's a lot of people that age who are just fine. So there's clearly a health issue going on. But on the Trump thing, what I'll just say is, so the what CNN did in locking everything down, like having mute buttons, being very like not allowing for follow-ups in the moment and all this, it benefited Trump. That format, for someone who often gets off the rails, that format benefited Donald Trump. He couldn't get himself into as much trouble, and it forced Joe Biden to sort of, one of the things that Trump had failed on the last debate is he didn't let Joe Biden talk himself into an issue. He didn't let Joe Biden be on display, which I think if you let Joe Biden continue to talk, he's going to trail off like that. He's going to forget his words. Right. And Trump was not letting him do that in the last debate. So the format and the muting and all that stuff benefited Trump. Here's my issue. He still lacks discipline to a significant degree. And now that's part of his personality, right? Where he gets off on these tangents. Mm-hmm. But he missed clear golden opportunities. You know, talking about Charlottesville, Biden's like, oh, you know, Nazis with flags. He should have gone right in on the anti-Semitism of the left. Such a huge missed opportunity, but he's so focused on like kind of getting into this defense of himself and, oh, I'm wronged and I'm a victim and da, 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 where he could have easily been like, okay, what about all these, and made Joe denounce right. the anti-Semitism from the left. So there were a lot of missed opportunities from Donald Trump that could have been much more strong. And that's why I say mm-hmm. that I don't think he won the debate. I think he did better than people expected him to, and he was disciplined, but he wasn't disciplined because he chose to be. He was disciplined because the rules forced him to be disciplined.
Maybe, but I also think that he went in saying, I'm going to let this guy tank himself. Yep. And he did.
Yes. Yep. I agree. 100%. So maybe a little bit of a combination right. there. It mm-hmm. wasn't Trump and all Trump's like unhinged, like ranting glory. So some of that was probably because his people told him, just be calm.
Yeah.
Calm, cool, collected. I liked the golf handicap thing. People Loved were making it. Fun of it. I thought it was hilarious.
It was hilarious. And that was the best part.
That was the only time CNN's like, yeah, unmute both those mics. Yeah. let's let them go at it. And I'm yeah. like, none of the other times, that's where you're going to let them like have a tit
Not
for tat?
Not even the seniors. Not even the seniors.
No, six handicap. Trump, that's the biggest lie he's told. So it was funny. But really sad for our country. Don't yeah. let people, as you try to talk about Joe Biden's age, his acuity, don't let them change the subject by Orange Mad Bat. Because it doesn't have to be a decision between the two of them. And even Democrats now agree that that doesn't have to be the choice for Americans. So that's just, yeah, what about? That's just whataboutism. So no, ridiculous. Okay, we're going to get to questions and comments and then our closing sanity check for you. Coming up in a moment, first, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. He's going to have another one of his inflation webinars. And that's because these have been so popular. A lot of people who are planning for retirement, especially if you're close, are very concerned about inflation. You've saved your whole life. You've worked hard for retirement. And now you have this insane inflationary environment where you're like, can I have the retirement I planned for? Because everything costs more. So Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they're having another one of their inflation webinars on July 25th, always happens at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, July 25th. You can sign up now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com, completely free. So you've got not only the inflationary environment, but you've got the election looming, global unrest, rising cost of living, market volatility. So protecting your retirement portfolio against risk has never been more critical, and it's what Bulwark Capital specializes in. It is their number one priority. So at the inflation webinar, you'll learn about all of that and how Bulwark Capital is seeking to lower risk, lower cost, give you as much upside as possible. So don't forget their next live webinar, July 25th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Sign up at knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, questions and comments from the live stream. Cheryl, audio and cameras in all classrooms. Yeah, somebody reminded me I was going to do, that was what it was. Nicole reminded me right before we went on air, but on the Sunday show, I said, I need to make my daily subscriber show poll about whether you think cell phones should be banned in schools, because there's this move to do that. And I get it, not wanting your kids to be distracted in class with their cell phones or whatever it is. But then you look at these instances, like our exclusive last week, where it would not have been captured. We wouldn't know about it had this sixth grader not had her cell phone in class. So, okay, tomorrow, Nicole. Tomorrow's subscriber okay. show poll. Don't let me forget. We'll be on that topic. I got all carried away with the Pride Month
I
stuff.
Would be fine with just having cameras in the classroom yeah. so the kids didn't have to worry about their cell phone use. But
yeah, I think cameras and audio, I think it would change the way a lot of teachers are teaching and some of the things that they're willing to say in front of kids, believing mm-hmm. that no parents will ever find out about it, Karina Champion. Lynn Blevins, it's almost impossible to fire a union rep. Yep. I mean, but that's the thing is we don't even know if the discipline was significant at all Or if it was just a talking to, like, hey, don't bring your sparkly dildo to class for a sex ed lesson next time, okay? For all we know, that's all it was, is just a verbal warning. We have no way of knowing. And I don't think that's right. Lexters lurked in Wonderland. Our kids went to a co-op where parents had to volunteer in classrooms. Parents' involvement changed the way kids are educated. Now, I'm assuming for the better. You didn't specify, but I'm assuming for the better, yes. Or at least having parents have a little bit more oversight in what's going on to guard against the insanity.
My nieces went to a co-op, and I love that. I love that arrangement because there's always a parent there to help. They kind of split the volunteer hours, and you can help in the classroom. You can help with the front office stuff. You can help all like playground, whatever it is. But I love it because there's always parents there kind of monitoring the situation.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. Yeah. And I mean, it's good to have parents involved and knowing what your kids are learning, whether it's good and bad, right? You know, you kind of pick it up and...
Right.
Yeah.
And like, let teachers teach as long as they're teaching the approved curriculum.
Yep.
I don't believe parents need to be in there lording over teachers and like, oh, I wouldn't have taught it that way. Da, da, da. Let teachers teach. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teachers who are wonderful educators who went to school for it, are experts in the area that they're teaching, especially at the high school level. Let them teach. We're not talking about that. We're not talking about replacing teachers with parents. We are talking about having reasonable guardrails. So when a parent sends their child to public school, they generally know what kind of education their kid is going to get. And it is not asking too much to say, don't bring a dildo to class. Don't rant about Ronald Reagan and homophobia. Don't lie about the Trayvon Martin case. Don't talk about white supremacy. So we're talking about common sense. Let me see. Dino, I'm glad you said something about the referendum emergency clause thing. Every time I talk about this stuff, people think I'm crazy. It's kind of depressing. Yeah, and this is politics in the weeds. I get it. All of you are much more informed on this stuff than the regular citizenry at large. It's because you like to hear about it. You like to talk about it. You like to join us in the middle of the day and discuss politics and all of those things. The emergency clause being added to the end of deeply unpopular bills so that they can avoid a referendum happens all the time. It should be against the law. They're circumventing the state constitution, but who's going to hold them accountable? They're the party in power. All right, on the initiatives, Robin says, will you be talking about the smear commercial attacking the three initiatives that are already on the ballot? Yeah, we'll be discussing that quite a bit. There was one about Brian Haywood. It's so funny how they try to vilify him, and I just don't think you can. He's just a nice, likable guy.
They have that picture of him in his nice little flannel. Yeah, and he looks like all-American dude.
He doesn't look like some rich hedge fund billionaire, so they kind of used a weird picture of him to try to vilify him. On Pride Month, Mandy, why are bikini baristas given so much hate, but we're okay with naked events?
That's a great point.
Oh, that's a good point, Mandy.
Yes.
The bikini baristas, didn't cities try to make that illegal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's still a fight. They're still fighting.
You can't have
about
an adult roll up for coffee knowing it's a bikini barista stand and there were questions about what aspects of their genitals they could show. But you're okay with a guy being peed on in a kiddie pool in front of children at Pride in San Francisco? You guys, this is silly. We got to move. I think that we're on the... Things get to the point where it's like, it's critical mass. And then there's going to be a swing back, and you might not like what the swing back is. It might be too severe. That's what I'm concerned about. And that's why you got to try to stop the crazy early, or else when the whiplash comes, it's going to be significant. A couple more. On the Olympia School District, Lane Weaver says, my health ed teacher in the 80s used a banana for the condom thing. That's pretty normal.
There's a story about that. They asked why they don't use bananas. These parents asked why they don't use bananas in Olympia. And they said, because I think kids don't want to eat fruit. Because it like grosses them out, I guess.
So if we use a banana to teach them how to put a condom on, they won't eat their fruit?
They won't eat their bananas.
So the natural next thing is a pink sparkly dildo with a suction cup at the end.
Obviously.
There's really nothing in between, right? It's either a banana or the dildo. So how can you blame the teacher? Somebody should count the number of times I said dildo in this episode. I apologize.
Do you want me to explain a little bit about that pizza clutch thing that they were talking about?
Yeah, we can. I should just ask, do we have a 1:30?
Nope.
Okay, great. sorry, I didn't make sure. We're going long today, so
Yes. So the pizza clash that they were talking about, because that was one of the other violations. They said that there might have been two instructors that weren't verified or hadn't passed the background check.
Visitors brought into the school who hadn't gone through the background check process to make sure they weren't sex offenders or felons. That was one of the things. And they belonged to this pizza clash thing.
So what that is this group that goes into different high school classrooms and they offer pizza to anyone who wants it. So, of course, kids are like, pizza? Great.
Yep.
And they go in and then they can ask them and teach them about anything LGBTQ plus whatever. And it's all their mandatory reporters. So if somebody's going to hurt themselves, then that might be one thing. But everything else is confidential.
Yep.
So kids go in there. They can learn more about being part of that community. And they have no, they don't have to give any of that curriculum or that net lesson material to anybody, but they lure them in with pizza.
And nobody knows what happens in there except the kids.
Right.
Wild stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. One more. Captain Cranky Pants Brandy, my youngest, graduated with honors from the Olympia School District and then tested into fifth grade math at college. So where are these? Youngest graduate with honors from Olympia School District and tested into fifth grade math at college. So where are these good teachers? So you're saying that they graduated with honors from OSD and then they tested at a fifth grade level for math when they went into college? Well, I don't know.
Not surprise me. And not just Olympia, but in a lot of school districts, they're just pushing kids through, pushing them through.
Yep. Well, we've seen the test scores. They're at 50% or lower in a lot of key issues across the state of Washington because we care more about political and social agendas. Mm-hmm. All right, good questions and comments per the usual. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? Oh, it's bound to happen. Democrats have reached that point in a presidential election year where they're so worried about their prospects of losing the presidency that they turn to D-list celebrities to try to make the case for them.
So what's on your mind?
Oh, Madam VP Harris, I'm worried about the election. Women's reproductive rights are on the line. Our Supreme Court is on the line. Our basic freedoms are being tested, Madam VP. I know you've been traveling across the country. What are you hearing?
Yeah, girl, I'm out here in these streets. And let me tell you, you're right, Taraji. There is so much at stake in this moment. The majority of us believe in freedom and equality. But these extremists, as they say, they not like us.
They not.
There's a full-on attack on our fundamental freedoms. The freedom to vote.
Yep.
The freedom to love who you love. The freedom to be safe from gun violence. The freedom for a woman to make decisions about her own body, not having her government tell her what to do.
Yeah, Kamala Harris says she's out there in these streets. If she was out there in these streets, she would know that video will convince absolutely no one to vote for her. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. God, how cringy is that? Who puts that together and decides, yep, that'll work? Send that out. Hit post on that one. If you have not signed up to support our show already, you can do that for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. UndividedPod.com. And we'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. And I promise it'll be a little more PC than today.